Thank you for the introduction. So my paper is titled Showing Versus Doing, Teaching by Demonstration. And I want to start out by talking a little about communication. So typically, when we think of communication, we think of it in terms of words or language or a message being sent from one person to another. But humans are actually really good at other kinds of communication, in particular, nonverbal communication. And this is especially apparent in domains like theater or performance or miming. So I'm going to show you a video here of a man miming, and I want you to try to figure out what he's trying to show his audience. Okay, so it's pretty clear what he's trying to show his audience. He's pretending to drive. He's showing that he's driving. Now, I want to compare the kind of behavior that he's doing when he's miming to what it's like when you're actually driving. Okay, so clearly these two are really different. For one thing, if you think about it, if you actually drove the way the mime was driving, you wouldn't be a very good driver. You'd be pretty bad. You wouldn't last very long on the road. And at the same time, if you mimed the way that the driver was actually driving, you wouldn't be a very good mime. You wouldn't be very good at showing what you were doing. But in some sense, showing and doing closely relate to each other, and showing builds on doing in some way. If you think, for example, in both cases, you're holding onto a steering wheel and you're doing kind of actions involving a steering wheel. So we're not interested in miming for its own sake, but rather as an example of nonverbal communication and of showing. And in miming, you're acting as if something is the case, and emphasizing certain actions. And so we developed a paradigm in which people have to do something similar, where they have to show something. And so in our paradigm, we gave people this grid world, and they were the little blue dot over there. And on every trial, they knew that the yellow tile over here was worth 10 points, and they had to get to it, and that would end the trial. But from trial to trial, what would change was the value of the middle colored tiles. And these could be either -2 or 0. So for example, in this case, we can say that the orange tiles are -0. The purple tiles are, the orange tiles are -2, the purple tiles are 0, and the blue tiles are 0. And so in our experiment, we had two conditions. We had a doing condition and a showing condition. And in the doing condition, we gave people the grid world, and we told them what the reward function was. We told them which tiles were safe and which were dangerous. And people would tend to do things like this. And we can represent that as a trajectory through the grid world like this. And in the showing condition, we also told people what the reward function was, but we also told them that they needed to show what the reward function was to another participant. So we told them that, we would take their behavior and show it to another person who needed to know what the value of each of the tiles were to do their version of the task. And so when showing, people would do things like this. And we can represent that as a trajectory through the grid world as well. And so if we take every participant's behavior on this task and plot it on top of each other, we get something like this. And what you can see from this is that there's a pretty clear qualitative difference between what people are doing in the doing version of the task and the showing version of the task. In the doing version of the task, for this particular reward function, people just go down and around to get to the goal tile and avoid the orange. Whereas in the showing, they also go down and around, but they make sure to hit certain tiles. They make sure to hit the purple tiles in particular on their way to the goal. And in some cases, they actually go out of their way to hit additional purple tiles before going to the goal. And what you can't see from this particular visualization is that some people do some really interesting things. So for example, this participant did this. They made sure that they hit every tile before getting into the goal. This person also made sure they hit every tile before getting into the goal, but they revisited certain tiles again. And this person did something really interesting. They picked specific transition points in the grid to repeatedly do over and over again. And so what each of these kinds of behaviors should kind of remind you of is miming in a way, because they're really bad ways of doing this task. They're really, really bad ways of optimizing this reward function, but they're really good ways for communicating to another agent or another person what the reward function on this grid is. And so our question was, how can we characterize this kind of subtle nonverbal communicative behavior computationally? Can we explain it mathematically? And so I said before that showing, in some sense, builds on doing. And fortunately, there's been a ton of work already looking at doing and formalizing doing and interpreting doing. And in psychology and cognitive science, this is often called folk psychology or theory of mind. And in computer science, this is often called inverse reinforcement learning or inverse planning. And the basic idea is really simple. So we can think of the behavior of an intelligent agent as being the product of beliefs and desires, of knowledge and motivation or reward function. And let's say we're watching the behavior of an intelligent agent, but we don't know what is motivating it. We're trying to figure out what's motivating it. That's okay. If we have a model of the agent, we can use that to, we can invert that model, and we can do inference over it to figure out what its underlying reward function is and what its underlying motivations are. And this is often formulated in a Bayesian framework, where we can think of an agent observing another agent as trying to infer a reward function given some trajectory or sequence of actions. So how do we get from observing and doing to showing? Well, an observing agent is inverting a model of a doing agent. So maybe we can think of a showing agent as taking a model of an observing agent and inverting that. So what do I mean by this? Well, we can still treat, from the observer's perspective, the actions of another agent as being those of a doing agent, but in reality, they aren't a doing agent. That's just kind of a mirage. In reality, a showing agent is selecting actions for an observing agent such that the observing agent will infer certain reward functions. And so we can represent this also within a Bayesian framework by thinking of the probability that a showing agent is going to select a trajectory being based on the probability that an observing agent will infer a particular reward function given that trajectory. And here this gamma parameter just controls the degree of maximization. It's a softmax parameter in the model. So to kind of summarize where we're at right now, we can think of doing agents as taking actions in the world, trying to optimize outcomes in the world, whereas showing agents are trying to convey a mental state to another agent, and their actions are communicative. And what should be clear from this is that agents can be both showing and doing at the same time. The two are not mutually exclusive. And in fact, in the task I discussed originally, we have people do that in the experiment. So how can this model actually explain the type of behavior we observe in the experiment when people are showing? Well, remember that we give people a series of trials where this is the grid world, and on each trial they're going to get one of these reward functions, and this corresponds to every combination of negative 2 and 0 for the middle colored tiles. And from the perspective of an observing agent, they're going to be updating a distribution over reward functions, over possible reward functions. And so we're going to assume that it's initially just neutral. It's a uniform prior over these reward functions. And they're going to be observing a trajectory. And so here I'm showing you four trajectories, but actually the space of trajectories is really, really big, but we're going to assume in the model that it's finite. So from the perspective of an observing agent is going to be updating a distribution over reward functions given a trajectory. And we can get a sense for how these reward function probabilities are going to be updated by superimposing one of these trajectories on each of the reward functions. And qualitatively speaking, we can say that the probability is going to be affected by two general features. First of all, whether the trajectory under the reward function avoids danger, and whether the trajectory under the reward function is an efficient way of getting to the goal under that reward function. And so if we look at these reward functions, for example, we can see that under them, the trajectory goes through a lot of negative tiles. So it's not doing a very good job of avoiding danger. So those are going to have very low probability for an observing agent. Under these reward functions, the trajectory is not very efficient because it's taking a lot of unnecessary steps before going to the goal. And so that's also going to have a low probability. These reward functions, however, have the trajectory both avoiding danger and being efficient under them. So those are going to have relatively high probabilities if they're observed by an observing agent. So we can do the same thing with JA2 over here. And if we look at the reward functions that had low probability under JA1, these are also going to have low probability under JA2 for the similar reasons. But now if we look at these reward functions, whereas before they had relatively high probability, now they have low probability because they don't do a good job of avoiding danger. And that only leaves R4 here as the only reward function under which the trajectory both avoids danger and is efficient. So that's going to be the one with the highest probability. Okay, so how can we think about this really wacky trajectory here involving going back and forth on certain tiles? Well, the thing to realize is that under all of these reward functions, the probability of doing this trajectory is very, very low. Because under none of the reward functions does it make sense to go back and forth on a particular tile. However, given that an observing agent observes this trajectory, what reward functions could it infer? Well, if we look at these reward functions, the trajectory under them goes back and forth on tiles that are punishing. So those are going to have especially low probability. It's not doing a good job avoiding danger. And if we look at this reward function, the trajectory under it takes a detour that doesn't seem to make very much sense. And so in some sense, the general shape of it is not efficient. So that's also going to have a low probability. But if we look at R4 again, for this one, it both avoids danger and its general shape is efficient for getting to the goal. So that's actually going to be the one with the highest probability, and it's going to have a much higher probability given it's observed. And so we can fill out the rest of this table. And now we can think of things from the perspective of a showing agent. So for a showing agent, they're going to be selecting one of these trajectories in order to get an observing agent to infer a reward function. Let's say that they want the observing agent to infer R4. Well, it's going to take these probabilities, exponentiate it, and then renormalize, and you'll get something like this. And what you can see from here is that J2 has a higher probability of being chosen by a showing agent than J1 because J2 does a better job of disambiguating R4 from all the other reward functions. And J3 does an even better job of disambiguating R4 from all the other reward functions, even though it's a terrible way of actually doing the reward function if you weren't showing it. So how does this model fit our data? Well, so remember that we had two conditions. We had the doing condition and the showing condition. And so we fit two models, a doing model, which is just a standard planning model, and the showing model that I just described to you. And so for what people did on the doing condition, the doing model fit better than the showing model. And for the showing condition, the showing model fit better than the doing model. And if we look at individual reward functions, we see a similar pattern for most of the reward functions, the same kind of interaction. So to summarize, we're really excited about this work because it shows that we can model these kinds of subtle nonverbal communicative behaviors like showing as optimal pedagogy, as optimally selecting sequences of actions to get another person or another agent to infer what reward function is being maximized or what reward function exists in the environment. And in particular, we're able to capture this kind of subtle miming behavior that people engage in which you're doing something that's really good for showing, but really bad for doing, and we're able to explain that through the model. And some additional things that I didn't get time to discuss here is that we took the trajectories from the human experiment and from the model, from the showing and the doing, and we fed them to just a standard off-the-shelf IRL algorithm that didn't have much pre-programmed into it. And we found that showing demonstrations did a better job of training the IRL in terms of having the IRL algorithm infer a reward function that was close to the original reward function. And so what this shows is that these showing demonstrations from humans are actually fairly robust for training, which is good because typically when developing IRL algorithms, people do it with doing demonstrations in mind and not showing demonstrations. So maybe we can start thinking about developing IRL algorithms that can explicitly benefit from showing demonstrations. And we're also working on developing ways to represent the showing policy in a more compact form. So stay tuned for that. And so I just want to take a second to thank all my collaborators, Joe, Michael, Fiery, and James, and thank all of you for listening. Should I just unplug?
We have time for questions.
Hi, thanks for the talk. So I have one question. So I'm thinking about the showing versus doing, and I assume that one of the differences here is that the observing agent already knows something about the objective function. So I mean, in the gridware example, he knows that it's supposed to go to the goal state as fast as possible. So the showing agent only have to transmit something, a limited part of, about the objective. So could this be formalized in some clever way to directly then derive how a showing demonstration should look like?
So I think that's a great point. It's critical that there at least be some common ground between a showing agent and an observing agent, because otherwise there's no way to get this kind of selection of more informative trajectories off the ground. And I think this framework can definitely handle formalizing the constraints on that. I think that's an important next step, is trying to figure out to what extent do you need common ground to communicate richer and richer reward functions.
Thanks.
So when you talk about getting close to other reward functions, how do you measure that distance?
So you're talking about the IRL results?
Yeah, when you say that showing demonstrations get results that are closer to the true reward function, mm-hmm. How are you measuring that distance?
Yeah, so we're just measuring it using the Euclidean distance. So you can think of the reward function in this case as just a mapping from features of states to whatever the reward is, and we're just taking that distance from the learned vector to the original vector. Thanks.
Actually, I have a question. Any thoughts how you can use these ideas to improve how we learn from demonstration in other, let's say, robot manipulation or other RL tasks?
How we can develop algorithms that learn better from these demonstrations. Yeah, so I mean, I think the kind of neat thing here is that you can, so we've gone one level up in terms of inverting the model of the observing agent in selecting trajectories. So in theory, we could go another level up to a learner reasoning about a teacher who is intentionally teaching and able to glean more from an individual trajectory. And actually, there's a lot of work in linguistics looking at how people communicate pragmatically. And this is what people are doing when they're trying to interpret pragmatic statements. So I think that's a really promising next step.
Are you familiar with, over here? Are you familiar with the cooperative IRL paper by Dylan Hadfield at UC Berkeley?
Yeah, I've seen that. That's really exciting work and very, very closely related. Yeah.
Let's thank the speaker again.